You want to be on the radio? Do it!
Hello, faithful KKFY listeners. My name is Conspiracy 911 Kennedy, a.k.a. Jake's Computer. I just want to testify that the following show is documented. The evidence is real and verifiable. Names have not been changed, so that the guilty are identified. Please stay tuned to 90.1 FM, and maybe even tell your friends to listen as frequently as possible. Holla.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, let's get ready to rumble!
There's nothing more romantic than fantasy. And we can make the war on terror distract them like videos and TV shows with scantily clad women. Cover them with oil, rub it in like lotion, put F-16s in the skies and battleships in the ocean. The voters won't notice. Tell them you're either with us or you're against us, and in the same breath over-vaccinate our soldiers. They'll want to believe these lies are true to the point that even Cynthia McKinney with proof won't be able to convince them that there's a connection between the war on terror and the Carlisle Group. They'll need to believe these lies are true. I said over-vaccinate our soldiers and coat their ammunition with radioactive DU. Fear is the final frontier of the defenseless. If it's logical, tell them it's senseless. You're either with us or you're against us. It's all about confusion. Name it the Patriot Act if it acts against the Constitution. One man, one vote is a joke. You should be more concerned about your family going broke. Poof. Mirrors. Smoke. Nah, watch me raise spending and lower taxes. The answer to any question that the 911 commission might ask is, we believe stem cell research is immoral. North Korea has WMDs, translation, time for operation, Iraqi freedom, sacrifice American lives on Baghdad soil, earn more from our investments in defense and increase our supply of oil. The question is, how come we haven't done anything about the genocide in Darfur? The answer is, we believe in protecting the sanctity of marriage. No child left behind. Wait, just give them a slogan. Let's roll. We're gonna smoke them out of their holes. Watch the hands. In this hand, Osama bin Laden. In this hand, the World Trade Center explodes. Now, I know you want me to get them for you, but the $200 billion question is, how much is it worth to you for me to allow my cronies' investments in defense to work for you? Don't worry about what we knew prior to the fact about the attack. That's a distraction. Carol Ann, look away from the oil fields. The important thing to remember is that voting for my opponent will get you killed. There's a connection between his election and your family's demise. That's why African-American voters have to be disenfranchised. Neo-democracy means that the electronic voting machine companies get to help us decide. That way you can win the election and still lose. That's the new world order. Global economy, no borders, no sovereignty. Widow's cries, corporate plutocracy. True lies.
Then, you know, we're betraying what I think is a solemn pact that we make with our veterans. My father served in World War II. My father served in World War II.
I think he misremembers.
My father served in World War II. And when he came home, he got the services that he needed.
That's not true!
Caroline Giuliani, the daughter of former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, has been arrested for allegedly shoplifting. Police say she pocketed five items at a Sephora cosmetic store in Manhattan. They also say she was caught on security cameras at the store. According to police, prosecutors decided to charge her with petty larceny, even though store managers didn't want to press charges when they learned who she was. The 20-year-old is the second of two children that Giuliani had with his ex-wife, Donna Hanover, and she is believed to be estranged from her father. A message left with Rudy Giuliani's office was not immediately returned.
It's mine, mine, oh mine. Hey! Yeah, my girl, she's one, two. She gonna get her skirt. Stay in her shirt. She got a razor for me. And she...
Investigations now underway into the death of a shoplifter at a CVS store on the city's south side. The suspect died after a struggle with a CVS employee. This happened over the weekend, and it happened there at that store located in the 2600 block of South Pulaski.
Well, Chicago police confirmed that an employee of a CVS drugstore in South Lawndale ran out of the store Saturday morning into the parking lot and then to the alley to pursue a man for stealing products out of the store. An autopsy revealed that the victim died from strangulation. Police are calling the incident an accident and said they do not have enough evidence to charge the store employee.
Was a good pop.
Anne-Marie Balboa, the ex-wife of 35-year-old Anthony Kaiser, who was allegedly strangled by the store manager of the CVS drugstore in South Lawndale over the weekend, creates a makeshift memorial at the scene.
It's harder than I thought. I don't know where it happened at. If it happened there, out here.
Balboa questions why her ex had to die for reportedly stealing 5 to 6 tubes of toothpaste.
The men who have applied the greatest weapon ever developed, the atomic bomb, are close-mouthed, serious, and highly impressed with the world-shaking magnitude of what they've done. We talked with Colonel Paul W. Tibbetts, Jr. of Miami, Florida, pilot of the B-29 that dropped the first atomic bomb in history. You asked him how he felt about it, and he said he didn't feel anything much, but you knew from talking to him that he sensed the meaning of that bomb's away. The explosion was a big ball of fire. Anyone not having dark glasses would have received a visual shock several miles away. One of the crew members said, "My God," when he saw what had happened. What had been Hiroshima was a white mountain of smoke, and when we saw it first, it was already up to 25,000 feet. About 1,000 feet off the ground, it looked like boiling dust. It extended over most of the city, churning down there, and the center of the impact was in the center of the city, and the boiling continued several minutes as we watched. Then the mushroom of smoke broke off, and another developed below it. This one bomb is the equivalent of a 2,000 B-29 raid.
The
the military options have been on the table and remain on the table, and certainly in that regard, it's one of the options that the president has. Again, I hope we don't get to that, but it's an important option, and it's one that's well understood.
There's a scary, dangerous nuclear weapons threat from Iran, and they just figure. You don't know about a safeguards agreement. You don't know about the nonproliferation treaty. You don't know the difference between 3.6% and 90-plus percent uranium-235, and therefore, if you're afraid of getting nuked in your jammies in the middle of the night, you'll let them go ahead and have their war. Last September, Mark Hosenball reported in a web-only exclusive for Newsweek magazine that the CIA and, in fact, the rest of the intelligence community, including the other 16 American intelligence agencies that we know about, that they all agreed and put paperwork on President Obama's desk, a new report on his desk saying that they stand by their conclusion of November 2007, that the Iranians do not have a nuclear weapons program and they have not made the political decision to start one. On February the 15th, the Director of National Intelligence, Dennis Blair, and I forget the gentleman's name, but he's the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, they both sat there, sworn under oath before the U.S. Imperial Senate, and said, "We still stand by the conclusion of the unanimous intelligence National Intelligence Council, representatives of all 16 intelligence agencies from November of 2007. And that is, the Iranians have not made the decision to begin to make nuclear weapons. And no, the ability to take a couple of hundred pounds of uranium enriched to 3.6% 235 and turning that into above 90-94% pure U-235 to making a weapon is not the same as flipping a light switch and taking one day. You're talking still about years and years. Plus, you got to have the metallurgist machine it into the actual pieces, and then you actually would have to have the, I'm not so certain about the terminology, people quibble, they do quibble about what's a delivery vehicle, what's a warhead. A warhead is the bomb. The delivery vehicle is what you put that in. Well, they don't have delivery vehicles and they don't have warheads, so I'm not sure how these things are supposed to hurt any of us. It's just nonsense. Another thing I would like to mention, or try to hit off of something that Mr. Ehrlich said in his talk there, is that a war with Iran would be a disaster. That's the way he put it. The way I put it is that a war with Iran would mean the deaths of thousands of American soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. 4,000 soldiers have died in the Iraq war in order to install the Iranians' puppets from the Dawa Party, the Mahdi Army, and the Supreme Islamic Council in power in Baghdad. And both Abdulaziz al-Hakim from the Supreme Islamic Council, who's now dead but his son is in charge, and Muqtada al-Sadr, the big kingmaker from the election a couple of weeks ago, have promised that they would go to war with the American occupation in the United States. These are the people who did not fight. These are the people who gained when America overthrew Saddam Hussein and have waited this whole time. And they have said, if you bomb Iran, you're going to have to start the war with us all over again. Not to mention the fact that our soldiers are right there within missile range. It is also perfectly within the capability of the Iranians to close the Straits of Hormuz at the gates of the Persian Gulf and drive the cost of oil up over $200 a barrel, which would probably destroy what's left of the global economy and the division of labor in global trade.
We like war. We're a warlike people. We like war because we're good at it. And you know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice.
This country's only 200 years old, and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war every 20 years in this country, so we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore. Huh? Can't build a decent car, can't make a TV set or a VCR. Got no steel industry left, can't educate our young people, can't get health care to our old people, but we can bomb your country, all right. Especially if your country is full of brown people. Oh, we like that, don't we? That's our hobby. That's our new job in the world, bombing brown people. Iraq, Panama, Grenada, Libya, you got some brown people in your country. Tell them to watch out, or we'll bomb them. Well, when's the last white people you can remember that we bombed? Can you remember the last white? Can you remember any white people we've ever bombed? The Germans, those are the only ones, and that's only because they were trying to cut in on our action. They wanted to dominate the world. That's our job. That's our fucking job.
Candidate for president, I pledged to bring the war in Iraq to a responsible end. Shortly after taking office, I announced our new strategy for Iraq and for a transition to full Iraqi responsibility. And I made it clear that by August 31st, 2010, America's combat mission in Iraq would end. And that is exactly what we are doing, as promised and on schedule.
Over 90 countries have promised to ban cluster bombs whose mini explosives often fail to explode and then lie like landmines for years. But campaigners say it's the banks now driving the trade, with financial institutions showing few qualms about funding the world's weapons makers.
This is what cluster bombs do, killing and maiming indiscriminately and hard to detect. They open mid-air and scatter hundreds of smaller explosives over a wide area. They can then remain dormant for years, eventually striking innocent civilians as they go about their daily lives.
One bomb can cover, you know, a couple of football fields in one shot, and then so many of them fail to explode. So you end up with basically fields of landmines that can remain for decades, killing and injuring people long after the conflict.
Despite global calls for a ban, banks continue pumping billions into manufacturers of cluster munitions, including two of Britain's biggest names. HSBC has underwritten $665 million of bonds for Textron, the US firm which claims its products leave a clear battlefield. Barclays Bank lent $222 million, as well as funding Lockheed Martin. While nations sign up to a convention to outlaw clusters, lenders are dodging the detail.
The convention itself does not explicitly ban investments in cluster munitions. It does, however, contain one prohibition on assistance on production. We feel very strongly that assistance on production means investing. If you invest in a company, you facilitate and you assist the production of these deadly weapons.
Britain's not alone. Citigroup and Deutsche Bank have loaned more than $1 billion between them. Campaigners say if their everyday customers knew where their money was going, they'd be furious.
They have customers worldwide who have given their trust in these companies, and we feel that it's up to these banks to end this involvement, because these customers don't want their money to be invested in these producers of cluster munitions.
This protest demanded answers from London's banks. Only Barclays responded, touting its anti-cluster policy, but admitting it lent money to Textron as a broad-based weapons manufacturer. 90 countries committed to banning clusters by next year, but only a quarter have so far made it law. The US hasn't even signed up. But although lawmakers may be in charge, it's banks that hold the keys to the cash. And campaigners say until they work together, there's little to stop the trade in gruesome, horrific death.
Mr. Calvini, we'd like to know why the IBBC, a bank, would be purchasing hundreds of millions of dollars worth of missile guidance and control systems from your company.
The IBBC has purchased billions of dollars worth of Silkworm missiles from the People's Republic of China, which they have resold to clients in the Middle East, contingent upon the missiles being equipped with Vulcan guidance systems. My company is one of only two in the world which produced the Vulcan.
Who's the other?
Sunay. Ahmed Sunay.
Of Turkish Aerotech.
But why is the bank committing so much of its capital and resources to the sale of these missiles?
It's a test. Small arms are the only weapons used in 99% of the world's conflicts. And no one has the capacity to manufacture them faster and cheaper than China. What Skarsen is attempting to do is to make the IBBC the exclusive broker of Chinese small arms to the Third World. And the missile deal is the gateway transaction.
Yeah, but billions of dollars invested simply to be a broker. There can't be that much profit for them.
No, this is not about making profit from weapon sales. It's about control.
Control the flow of weapons, control the conflict.
No. No, no. The IBBC is a bank. Their objective isn't to control the conflict. It's to control the debt that the conflict produces. You see, the real value of a conflict, the true value, is in the debt that it creates. You control the debt, you control everything. You find this upsetting, yes? But this is the very essence of the banking industry. To make us all, whether we be nations or individuals, slaves to debt.
Being a member of the Intelligence Committee, obviously you have a lot of insight into this. You've been to Afghanistan. And so I guess the first place to start is, let's start with that intelligence leak. It's a spill of information, 92,000 pages, of documents thrown onto the web. We come to find out that most or all of it from a PFC who, for whatever reasons, decided to do this. And I guess the initial question is, how serious is this? I think we know that, but that's more of a rhetorical. And secondly, how can a private do this? How does that happen?
Yeah. Well, there is a serious and growing problem within the government of this. I call it the culture of disclosure, where if you don't like something or you think you don't like something, as in many cases, the information they have that causes a leak is not accurate because they have such a small portion of the whole picture. It's hard to make a decision based on one piece of the puzzle, but they do it often. And this was the same example. So he releases this information to a third party who they say will make the determination there's nothing harmful in it. Well, we know for a fact that people will likely be killed because of this information being disclosed. That's pretty serious. I would absolutely, if they won't charge him with treason, they ought to charge him with murder.
Well, shouldn't he be charged with treason?
I argue he should be charged with treason.
Do you think he will be?
It's yet to be determined, I think, on the way. They're trying to determine how he disclosed it and the way he did it. I guess there's some qualifiers in there, and if he would rise to the level.
And isn't treason in a time of war a capital crime?
Yes, and I would have absolutely, I would support it 100%.
Virge Bernaro, the mayor of Lansing, Michigan, is joining us now via a webcam Skype. Mr. Mayor, thanks for being with us. We're not going to know the details for a few more hours, but we know this much. The broad plan. GM, for example, is going to be cutting back on its workforce, shuttering factories, reducing its lineup of brands to, four from eight. What's your reaction to the plan?
Well, first of all, I got to say, in all honesty, I was a little offended by your question. You know, have the unions given up enough? Has the working man given up enough? You know, my question is, has Wall Street given up enough for the billions that they have taken? I got to tell you, I am so sick and tired of the double standard. One standard for Washington and Wall Street and another standard for working people in this country. It always comes down to, in order to be more competitive, we got to take it out of the hide of the working person, cut their pay, cut their benefits. How much is enough? Let me ask you, have the bonuses been cut on Wall Street? What has Wall Street given up? Yeah, what has Washington given up? It's always
there,
the working person who takes
question,
it on the chin and who's thrown it under the bus.
But
so
now
I'm
that you bring it up,
this, package,
let's
and
not
we
talk
don't
about
mind.
It.
The auto industry will step up and we'll take our lumps. But by gosh, let's have some reciprocity in this country.
Mr. Mayor, that wasn't my question, and I'm sorry you're offended by it. But now that you bring it up, here's today's editorial in the New York Post. The overall per-worker burden at the big three is upwards of $70 per hour compared to $27 an hour earned by the average private sector worker in the upper Midwestern states. As a result, General Motors loses $2,000 per car sold. That is unsustainable. Wouldn't you agree that UAW workers need to swallow some pay cuts, substantial ones?
Greg, I don't know about you, but I have good health benefits here in the city of Lansing. My guess is that Fox provides you with some good health benefits. So now General Motors and the other of the big three are to be penalized for providing, for doing a social good and stepping up to the plate and providing health benefits and some pension for their workers. Give me a break. You know, Wall Street got billions of dollars, no strings attached. They haven't suffered one iota. And all we can talk about is how much more blood we can squeeze out of the turnip, how much more we can get out of the working person. I'm telling you, Americans are sick and tired of it across this country. The double standard between working people. I know Wall Street doesn't understand working people and industries that actually produce something. But let me tell you, let me just jump ahead,
Mayor,
because
you
this
and
thing's
I are,
gonna have to be paid back.
There must be a disconnect
package,
on our Skype.
When this
webcam,
stimulus package has to be paid back,
because I asked
back
you about pay
growth,
cuts and you're
GDP,
talking about
GDP
healthcare.
Is gross domestic product. That means you have to produce something. What are we going to produce in this country if we allow the auto industry to go by the wayside? Like every other industry that we've shipped overseas.
Can I get a question in here? I asked you about a pay cut for workers, not health care, but now that you've brought up health care, let me put it this way. $47 billion in future costs to UAW workers for health care for life. You're wrong. I don't get health care for life here. And isn't that part of the problem? They need to give up that which no other worker gets, health care for life.
The UAW has already made concessions, and I'm sure they'll make more concessions. But if you think you're going to make me feel guilty about the fact that I had health benefits as a kid and I was able to have straight teeth because my dad retired from GM, and if you think my 84-year-old father and other retirees like him, hundreds of thousands across this country, if you think they should feel guilty for the benefits they received, I disagree with you. General Motors and the Big Three provided a wonderful standard of living. They helped create the middle class in this country, which is now under attack because of the outsourcing that has taken place, and Wall Street and Washington just don't get it. This unholy alliance is not working for the average American, and since 2001, since China joined the WTO, we've lost something like 2.3 million jobs directly to China because of the unfair trade. Our Americans are competing on an unfair playing field, and no wonder they can't win. And what you're setting up and what you're contributing to is a race to the bottom so that we think that every American is the standard now, that we should be paid Americans like a third world peasant. It is a race to the bottom. I'm sorry, it's wrong. We're setting up a race that the Americans cannot win. They shouldn't have to compete on that basis. We need fair trade, not free trade. We are suffering from the free trade policies that both Democrats and Republicans
Mayor,
have perpetrated
upon us. Television show. It's not a campaign speech. You're not the ever-ready battery. Calm down. We're just having a discussion here.
Of money are popping up across mid-Michigan, and supporters say it's not counterfeit, but rather competing currency. NBC 25's Dan Armstrong investigates.
They sound like real money and look like real money, but you can't take them to the bank. That's because they're not made at a government mint, but rather private mints.
I sell at least three or four every single day, and then I get one or two back a week.
Dave Gilley, owner of Gilley's Coney Island Restaurant in Genesee County's Genesee Township, also accepts silver, gold, copper, and other precious metals to pay for food. He says if he wanted to, he could accept marbles.
Do people have to accept dollars or money? No, they don't. They can accept anything they want, or they can refuse to accept them.
He's absolutely right. The U.S. Treasury Department says the Coinage Act of 1965 says private businesses are free to develop their own policies on whether or not to accept cash unless there is a state law which says otherwise. That allows gas stations to say they don't accept $50 or $100 bills after a certain time of day in hopes of not getting robbed. A chiropractic office in Lapeer County's Deerfield Township allows creativity when it comes to payment.
This establishment accepts any form of silver, gold, chicken, apple pie. You know, if someone works it out with me, I've taken many things.
Jeff Kachunian says he used this Ron Paul half troy ounce of silver to get $25 worth of gas from a local station. While the government and banks don't accept them, many others do.
It's going to be fun to watch the White House explain this one. Of course, we already know what they're going to do. Barack Obama will say something like, "No, conservatives and Republicans, they just want to go back to the same old ideas that have never worked. They're standing in the way and wanting to block progress, yada, yada, yada."
They have not come up with a single solitary new idea to address the challenges of the American people. They don't have a single idea that's different from George Bush's ideas. Not one.
That's right, Mr. President. We're dummies. We don't have a single new idea. Yeah, you know what? Republicans don't have a lot of new ideas. There are a lot of retread ideas. That's why I think, Mr. President, you should talk to those Tea Party people. Because they got some really new ideas they haven't tried in about, 150 years. Of course, now your ideas, they're brand new. When I first heard your ideas about 1848, I'm trying to think, when did Karl Marx write that stuff down? Seriously. You've got ideas that have unquestionably failed, and failed spectacularly every time they've been tried. No, I know. Oh, it's just never been done right. Broken economy after broken economy, continent after continent, millions dead. I don't know if it can be done right. I'm not willing to give it a whirl. Why are you, Mr. President, giving a few people power to save the collective? You know, I've been thinking about this. It's not even Marxism. Older than 1848. Yeah, a lot older. Maybe the oldest idea known to man. I will save them all. Where have I heard that? I will save them all. And they will all return to you. Give me the credit. Oh, that's good. That's good. I know I've heard that someplace. Kind of the ends justify the means and Saul Alinsky. Oh, you know what? I remember where I heard that. It wasn't Saul Alinsky, but I read about it in his book. Who did Saul Alinsky dedicate his book to? It was,
Could it be?
it's a great thing for history.
George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, William Howard Taft, and President Barack Obama. One young girl traced them all back to one common ancestor.
They're all cousins and all grandsons of John Lackland.
It's the first family tree of its kind. Pouring through more than 500,000 names for months, 12-year-old Bridge Ann D'Avignon discovered that all the U.S. presidents, except Martin Van Buren, are related to the former King of England, John Lackland Plantagenet, signer of the Magna Carta in 1215.
Mildred Reed is his first great-grandmother on George Washington. And on Obama, Mildred Reed is the 10th great-grandmother.
It started as an assignment to research her own lineage, tracing it back to roots in France. But Bridge Ann wanted to branch out.
Well, I think we just all go back somewhere. It's just a matter of proving it.
She started with George Washington. But unlike other professional genealogists that only looked at the male family lines, Bridge Ann was able to link the presidents together using both male and female ancestry. Before this, historians had only been able to link 22 family trees.
She kind of created a triumph of women's studies here.
Bridge Ann also figured out she's an 18th cousin of President Obama, something she hopes to be able to share with him in person.
I've written a letter to Obama, but I just gotten standard reply. I hope to meet the president and like explain it to him.
Cheney and Barack Obama are distant cousins, the New York Post decided to check into the genealogy of President Bush, and his family tree has people talking. Early show national correspondent Tracy Smith has the story of George W. Bush's many relations.
My honor to bring to you the 41st president, a great dad, George H.W. Bush.
We all know his father, but what about his cousins? Check out this family tree, done with research by Ancestry.com.
What would you say if I told you he's related to all of those people?
That you're wrong?
Oh, no, I'm not. Let me take you through this, branch by branch. Dick Cheney is actually a blood relation. He's President Bush's 9th cousin once removed. Cheney's cousin Barack Obama is also Bush's 11th cousin and the 9th cousin of Brad Pitt. But we're only just getting started. President Lincoln was President Bush's 7th cousin 5 times removed, and Bush shared more than just a ballot with John Kerry. That's right, their 9th cousins twice removed.
Bush. Really? What do you think of that?
Yeah, they have the same chin.
There's also royalty in the Bush
bloodline.
Princess Diana was Bush's 11th cousin twice removed. And then there's this bombshell.
Happy birthday, Mr. President.
Sure, she may have been singing to JFK, but what about GWB? He is, after all, her ninth cousin, three times removed.
Maybe it's the eyebrows. I think the eyebrows.
They have the same eyebrows.
He's also related to Playboy founder Hugh Hefner, even Pocahontas, and
Vlad the Impaler.
When our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled.
Now, all new at 6, we have new developments in a Channel 2 Action News investigation which exposed people using fake deeds to steal North Georgia homes. Tonight, one of the so-called sovereign citizens accused in the racketeering case is speaking to Channel 2 Action News. Investigative reporter Jody Fleischer broke the story last week and is here now with what that man had to say.
John Corey Freeman contacted me because he wanted to spread the word about his beliefs. He says he isn't stealing houses to make money or have a free place to live. He sees himself as sort of a sovereign Robin Hood, taking houses from the banks to give to needy families.
I love God so much that I know this is right to tell people.
Corey Freeman says he isn't running from police and he isn't hiding what he's doing because he wholeheartedly believes his interpretation of the law is correct. That by deeding himself this five-bedroom home in Henry County for 21 silver dollars, he is now the rightful owner.
Our ancestors were Moors and Hebrew Israelites and also Mexican nationals, which said, hey, this land is free land and no need to fight over it. Just go get it.
Freeman has declared himself a sovereign citizen, immune to the laws most of us follow. He's filed dozens of pages of paperwork at courthouses, including this affidavit of free land, complete with a photo of 21 silver dollars. He believes only people can own land, not banks.
So you don't feel like you're stealing from these banks?
You can't steal from someone that does not own something, really. So I would definitely say no.
I don't remember when we the people signed over ownership of ourselves. It just gradually happened by them taking more and more of our freedom. But here's the worst part. It's really only just begun. In this modern age, the information age, getting your money is not enough, even though money, don't let anyone deceive you, is the material source of your freedom. Now, however, they want your mind. If you deviate in your thinking, if you commit one of the 10,000 taboos, and they perceive your actions as a threat, they'll come out and kill you. It was the thought police who killed the children at Waco and Ruby Ridge. Neither David Koresh nor Randy Weaver, whatever things might be said about them, had ever mugged anyone, robbed a 7-Eleven, or committed forcible rape or murder. But they did have unorthodox views, and therefore it was necessary to round them up and deal with them. Whatever their crimes were, they could have been arrested and tried openly in a court of law. But that was not the aim of certain factions in the government. These statists wanted a massive demonstration of force to show who was boss. The penalty for resisting is death. After all, we're not free. We belong to the government, and deviant thoughts will not be tolerated. In the aftermath of the horrible Oklahoma City bombing, government propagandists tried to intimidate the people into silence by recklessly linking criticism of the government to acts of murder. Some people ask, how can you fear your government and claim to love your country? Our response is, how can you love your country without fearing your government? Who else holds a counterfeit license to kill, incarcerate, and confiscate for non-crimes? Remember, America is about liberty first and last, not obedience to bureaucrats. The Washington power clique wants you to shut up, get in line, do what you're told to do, and most outrageously, think what you've been told to think. We have hundreds of politicians and thousands of lobbyists crawling all over Washington, thinking of ways to control you, to extend their will over you, to subvert your freedom and replace it with their will, to capture, that is, to steal, your life force. And so we should all be very angry, because anger is the engine that drives our will to resist. And without resistance, without awareness, they will take it all. That's not just politically perverse. It's a sin against mankind, because freedom is actually sacred. Drop an ant into a jar and seal the lid. It will spend the rest of its life trying to get out. It has nowhere to go, but it wants to be free. That is its nature. It's the way every living thing is made. Once, a long time ago, I saw something at the zoo, a wolf lying in its cage. I thought about how this magnificent animal was the end product of millions of years of evolutionary design. A nose that could detect the faintest scent, ultrasonic hearing, eyes that could see in the dark, teeth and jaws capable of crushing thick bone, heart and lungs that could run him for hours in a sub-zero blizzard. And yet, there he was, lying forlorn and full of despair. He was well fed. He had a clean habitat and water and medical care. So what was the problem? He was sick with the knowledge that his wonderful powers would never be exercised again. And so he lay there, his head on his paws, staring blankly ahead at perhaps some imaginary forest that he could never reach because there were bars around him. They had not killed his body, but they were destroying his soul. God gave Adam and Eve freedom, even though he knew they would invite death into the world. That's how important freedom is in the divine scheme of things. And that's why we urge you to defend it, always.
In December of 2007, a ton of liquid asphalt was $175. We're getting quotes at over $1,000 a ton now. Asphalt has gone up so much because it's petroleum-based, I don't believe we're going to have the ability to build asphalt roads in 50 years. What we're proposing is a road that pays for itself over its lifespan. Not only pay for itself, but provide a whole slew of new features.
Welcome to Solar Roadways.
There's 25,000 square miles of road surfaces, parking lots, and driveways in the lower 48 states. If we covered that with solar panels with just a 15% efficiency, we'd produce three times more electricity than this country uses on an annual basis. And that's almost enough to power the entire world. Roads are collecting heat anyways. This thing collects the power and stores it. Your whole road is an electric grid that delivers the power right to your front door, along with cable TV, high-speed internet access, your telephone, everything right there. The technology behind it has already been done to death. I'm just taking a lot of different technologies, making something new out of it. The one thing that hasn't been done is driving on glass. It's got to have the same traction as asphalt, has to be strong enough to support a fully loaded semi-truck, locking them up at 80 miles an hour, shatterproof, fireproof, transparent enough to allow the sunlight through but not to allow the glare back into the driver's eyes, all these specs.
The idea of making a road out of glass is really out-of-the-box thinking, because most people, when you mention the word glass, all they can think about is its fragility and ability to fracture. In fact, glass can have as high a strength as steel. We know how to manufacture glass. We know what photovoltaics are. We know what we have to do to protect glass from damage. We know what it takes to lower manufacturing costs. The research that's really needed has more to do with adapting glass for this particular application.
A solicitation came out from the U.S. Department of Transportation for an intelligent pavement that could generate power and pay for itself. And so we applied for it. That gave us the funds to actually build a prototype. We purchased parts to build a 12-foot by 12-foot full-size solar road panel. And our solar road panel has a 32 by 32 array of individual electronic modules. Each of these have LEDs, three white and three yellow. We milled some traces underneath for the cable. So our cables are coming in and they feed the electronics modules. We're sending commands to the microprocessor wirelessly. The microprocessor determines which of the LEDs are lit up. And we can spell words this way. There's a total of 6,072 LEDs in the prototype. So we can spell just about anything we want in there. In addition, we built a 3 foot by 3 foot panel with a frame around it. And we call this our crosswalk panel. There are load cells in here, and it's a weight machine, basically. If you're driving at night and you're daydreaming or something and somebody steps off in dark clothing onto a crosswalk in front of you, that crosswalk starts to flash, the road in front of you starts to flash, it gets your attention, tells you to slow down. What we've learned, your LEDs are recessed into the road. If you stand pretty far off from it, you can't see those LEDs anymore. So what we've discovered is we can actually put it inside the glass layer on top. What we'll do later is fill the interior with a cold curing laminate.
And in that way, they're sandwiched in a hermetically sealed environment so that moisture won't get at them.
We want to pull the garbage out of landfills and out of the ocean. We take that trash, we turn it into little pellets, we mix that with organic material to make the internal support structure for our solar panels. There are engineering degrees out there they didn't have when I went through, environmental engineering degrees. And a whole generation of new engineers coming up wanting to spend their careers working on the environment. I think that's fantastic.
You realize that everything that your ancestors did affects us today, and everything we're doing now is going to affect generation after generation who are going to come after us.
We can't keep building asphalt roads, doing the same thing they've been doing since Eisenhower opened the federal highway system in the 1950s. It's an antiquated system we've been using for far too long. It's time to move on.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
I'm Morgan Freeman.
and I chicken to China, the Chinese chicken. I have a drumstick, and my brain stops ticking. Watching X-Files with no lights on, Dan's LeMay's on. I hope the smoking man's in this one. Like Harrison Ford, I'm getting frantic. Like Sting, I'm tantric. Like Snickers, guaranteed to satisfy. Like Kurosawa, I make mad films. Okay, I don't make films. But if I did, they'd have a samurai.